Jesus has been in the temple courts quite a bit every day. The religious officials have been getting more and more upset with him. They've been looking for ways to get rid of him, trying to find ways to arrest him and to get him out because he is causing problems. He is criticizing them and pointing the way for the people. And the religious people, religious officials, chief priests, Sadducees, Pharisees, the whole lot of them have not been walking the way they should. Many of them had walked with the Lord a long time, like many of us. The longer we walk with the Lord, certain things become second nature to us. Certain things become easier for us. But also there's new temptations that emerge for us. A couple of challenges of walking with the Lord for a long time. One is the challenge of turning our faith into a religion of works. We develop certain habits as Christians. Many of those habits are excellent, praiseworthy, what we should focus our life on. But sometimes those habits become what we believe our religion, our faith is all about. And pretty soon, God is up there and we believe in God and we go to church and everything and we even read the Bible sometimes. But it's all just become empty ritual. And we walk with the Lord and our habits, which at one point were new and fresh and exciting, over time become rituals and empty of meaning. Another temptation is that we become comfortable with the way things are. We have our own little world all structured, and we have our habits, we have the places we go, and we might even have our morning devotions. We get up and we do our little prayer and all kinds of stuff, and we just become comfortable. And we think, oh, this is nice. You know, God comes along and he has a way of causing a little discomfort in our lives and challenging us to not be satisfied with the status quo. One example of some Christians like this was the church in Galatia. The church in Galatia had churches, I should say, the Galatians. There are probably many churches scattered in what today would be known as Turkey, the country of Turkey. But there are scattered churches throughout the area of Galatia. We just call them the Galatians. There's no city called Galatia. It's the whole area. We could call it like the Idahoans or whatever. They had put their faith and trust in God. Paul the Apostle and other preachers had gone through their cities, and they had put their faith in God, and they were growing in their faith. And then some people came along, and known as the Judaizers, they came along and said that the Galatians needed to follow certain rules and rituals in order to be Christian. And so there developed a legalism that was eating away at their joy and peace. And Paul writes the letter to the Galatians, and in that letter he says, no, you are not bound by those things. We are free in Christ. And so Paul was trying to reverse all of that. Well, here is Jesus, the last week of his life before the cross, before his trial. We call this time the Holy Week. He was teaching in the temple, and he was there with his disciples, watching people come and go. Very busy place, the temple. Lots of people coming and going and all kinds of things happening. And he uses this opportunity to give his disciples an object lesson. Verse 38. As he taught, Jesus said, "Watch out for the teachers of the law. They like to walk around in flowing robes and be greeted in the marketplaces and have the most important seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at banquets. They devour widows' houses and for a show make lengthy prayers. Such men will be punished most severely." Jesus sat down opposite the place where the offerings were put and watched the crowd putting their money into the temple treasury. Many rich people threw in large amounts. But a poor widow came and put in 2 very small copper coins, worth only a fraction of a penny. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, "I tell you the truth, this poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. They all gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all she had to live on." There's 2 types of people described in this passage. The first one are those who are very comfortable in their own abilities and wealth. The teachers of the law, the scribes, very brilliant, educated. In today's terms, they'd have a PhD. They had been to synagogue school. They'd been in the temple. They knew the Bible. They studied the Bible. A scribe in the ancient world was not just someone who sat down and wrote letters, but they did copy. That was part of what they did. Scribes, they wrote things. But they were the teachers. They are the ones who studied the Jewish scriptures, and they knew it well. They were the legal experts in the Jewish law and the Bible, a highly respected position in that time. They had developed, though, a bad reputation, kind of like what we'd call today a politician. You know, they had the power, they had the position, they had the wealth, they had the respect, and they just kind of were over there. And they were kind of removed from the average daily people. And Jesus describes them in several ways in this passage. One, these people, these teachers of the law, they walk around in flowing robes. In today's parlance, we'd say they kind of had a 3-piece suit with a nice bright tie and driving their Porsche, you know, and they were just like decked out with their nice, you know, the latest iPhone 5 or 6 is going to come out sometime soon. But, you know, they had all the latest gadgets. They were nice looking, the nice haircut, everything. And they were walking around in flowing robes to be greeted with respect in the marketplace. They were trying to draw attention to themselves. And so they had put on their fine clothes and they'd strut around and, you know, maybe with their fingers left like this. I don't know how they did it back then. But they would get attention to themselves. Second, they take the most important seats in the synagogues and places of honor at the banquets. They wanted to be first. They wanted people to see them and congratulate them for their hard work. No doubt they worked hard. To become a scribe was hard work. It took a lot of study and so on. And so they wanted this kind of honor towards them. Third, now Jesus turns it a little bit. They devour widows' houses. Well, who was giving the offerings for these scribes? They were taking money from those who had very little, like the widows. And we'll talk about them in a few minutes. And they were, fourth, they would make lengthy prayers for show. You know, they get up and pray and get all the fancy words out. You know, Jesus said, when you pray, go into the closet. God already knows what you're going to ask. You don't need to put it into fancy words. But these people, they'd get up and maybe out on the street corner even. And they would make these long prayers and loud and use fancy words. And then Jesus ends, these men will be punished most severely. They're looking for honor, but their act that is going to be reversed. And they're going to find shame when it comes to the day of judgment. They had a form of piety without godliness. They looked religious on the outside. In today's terms, they maybe would go to church. You know, every time the church doors opened, they were there. Not to pick on Gary, but they'd sit on the front seat. Everybody should move up a little bit. But, you know, they would be there. They looked religious, and they would carry their great big old Bibles, like the one we have up there. You know, you can just imagine going into the grocery store carrying a big Bible like that. No, I'm kind of building it a little bit too much. But Jesus said their motives were wrong. They were doing all of this to draw attention to themselves rather than out of a true heart of godliness and of purity. They were just in it for the show, just pretending. Well, the second type of person that Jesus draws attention to here is the type of person who is dependent on the mercies of God and on the mercies of other people. This would be the poor widow. What was a widow like back in those days? Well, one, there was no Social Security. There was no retirement fund. A widow was very desperate, unless she, most of the time, sometimes it could be a he, but mostly a widow, a lady, would be very desperate unless she had family, because there's no way to earn a living. She would beg off the generosity of others. And so most widows back then lived in poverty. There are few ways for them to earn any kind of income. And so here is this poor widow. We know her as giving the widow's mite, just this little coin that'd be real small, very small coin worth very little. It was called a lepta. According to different dictionaries, it would take either 4 to 8 of these to make 1 cent. It was the smallest coin available in that day and age. The money that she gave in the offering was trivial. It'd be like just putting a penny in for us today. Not much at all. Unimportant, insignificant. It wouldn't make a world difference in the temple treasury at all. It is significant, though, that she had two of these. You ever notice that? She gave 2 widow mites. You know why that's important? Why that's interesting to me? Because she could have kept one. She could have given 1 to the temple treasury, to God, and she could have kept 1 for her own needs. But she didn't. She gave both, all she had. Instead of keeping 1 for herself, she gave it all to God. Well, we see 2 responses then with these 2 different kinds of people. One gave out of their abundance. They had a lot of money to give. They were billionaires, and they gave $1,000. You know, if someone gave $1,000, wow, you know, that'd be great. $10,000, no big deal. $100,000, no big deal. That's change. $1 million to a billionaire, that's nothing. He gets interest off of his billion in an hour. You know, that's just throwaway money. The other is this widow, and she gave all she had. I'm reminded of a story in 1 Kings chapter 17. It's very similar. Elijah the prophet was ministering. It was a time of very severe drought in the land of Israel. No rain, nothing was growing. People were getting desperate. And so the Lord told him to go to Zarephath in the region of Sidon and stay there. Elijah was to go and find a widow and ask her for food. And so that's what Elijah did. He went and he went to the town gate, and there was a widow gathering sticks. It doesn't say gathering logs. She was gathering little pieces of kindling. That's all she could get, was little pieces of kindling. So Elijah called her over and said, "Would you bring me a little water in a jar so that I may have a drink?" As she was going to get it, he said, "And bring me, please, a piece of bread." Well, she turned around and says, "Surely as the Lord lives, I don't have any bread, only a handful of flour in a jar and a little bit of olive oil in the jug. I'm gathering sticks to take home so that we can cook this up and so we can eat our last meal before we starve to death." Elijah said, "Don't be afraid. Go and prepare the bread for me, and God will take care of you." So what did the widow do? You remember the story? She went and she obeyed. And she went and cooked the bread, took all she had, what she thought she had. She gave it all to Elijah, the prophet. And then the miracle took place. The jar of flour, or the container of flour and of oil, never ran out as long as the drought continued in the land of Israel. This widow gave all she had to the Lord's prophet, and the Lord took care of her. It's not the man who can build the biggest brush heap, but the one who can set his heap on fire that will light up the country. I have been collecting brush and sticks from the many olive trees that are on my property, and it's probably as big as maybe this part of the sanctuary, or it will be by the time I'm done in a few weeks. It might even be as big as this whole room. I don't know. That's how much I have. But it does no good just to sit there, does it? No, we've got to actually light it on fire. How can the Lord light a fire in our life? Well, we can just kind of coast along in our religiosity and do our good churchly things and read our Bible once in a while and do our little devotions and so on. But God comes along and He challenges us, like in this passage, to put our all on the altar. Everything we have, not just the things that are comfortable for us. You know, yeah, we can, and I'm not talking about finances today, I'm talking about our very existence. We could just say, okay, God, you can have this part of my life. I'll keep this part for my own. I kind of like what I'm doing over here, and I like the way my life is structured over here and the things I do, and I'll give you 2 hours a week. Yep, 2 hours. And all the rest, that's mine. This is a choice that we will never regret. In Yorkshire, England, during the 1800s, two sons were born to a family named Taylor. The older one set out to make a name for himself by entering Parliament and gaining public prestige. But the younger son chose to give his life to Christ. He later recalled, "Well do I remember, as an undeserved consecration, I put myself, my life, my friends, my all, upon the altar. I felt I was in the presence of God, entering a covenant with the Almighty." With that commitment, Hudson Taylor turned his face towards China and to obscurity. He was just going to disappear and go serve the Lord in China. As a result, however, he is known today as one of the greatest missionaries of all time, a faithful missionary and a founder of the China Inland Mission, known today as the Overseas Missionary Fellowship, OMF. The other son, however, who set out to make himself a name, no one knows who he is. When you look in the encyclopedia, he's just known as the brother of Hudson Taylor. One gave his all to the Lord and went to China and became famous for his sacrifice. The other wanted to make a name for himself. We never knew about him. Isaiah 26, verse 3. "You keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on you, because he trusts in you." Do we trust in the Lord? Is our mind set on the Lord? The promise this verse says is that we will have peace, and the Lord will dwell here with us. Andrew Murray has this quote, "God is ready to assume full responsibility for the life wholly yielded to Him." If we give our life to God, we're giving Him responsibility for ourselves. If we keep our life, who's in charge? We are. Do you want to be in charge of your own life? I'd rather have God be my guide and the one who's going to help me in my life. There was a father who had two daughters who loved him, and when he would come home from work, they would just go and swarm him and love him when he came into the door. One evening he came into the door and the little girls ran up to him to hug Daddy. One grabbed his leg and hugged with all of her might. And then he grabbed the other and picked her up. The girl squeezing her father's leg said, "Now I've got all of Daddy." And she smirked at her other sister. And the other sister, the daughter who was in the father's arms, said, well, you may have all of daddy, but daddy has all of me. I'll challenge you to take a blank piece of paper, sign your name on it, and say, God, here is my life. It's a blank piece of paper. Do with it as you want. My life is yours. It's in your hands. Do with it as you please. Christ calls us to give our whole life to Him. There's no dedication to Him without complete surrender. It's interesting that this passage comes not too long after another passage in Mark 12. I skipped it because I think I preached on it recently. But it's about where a teacher of the law comes and asks what he must do to get to heaven. And Jesus replied with the two greatest commandments. What is the greatest commandment? In verse 30, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Well, we kind of think about the heart, soul, mind, and strength part, but we forget the all part. That's important, the all part. Love the Lord our God with all of what we are. We pray in the Lord's Prayer, Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. We need to personalize that a little bit. Thy will be done in my life, Lord. And so to give ourselves all of who we are. This widow, she was giving all she had to the Lord. And she was, in essence, entrusting herself to God because that's all she had. And no doubt God was going to take care of her. And she had faith for that. Sometimes it's not easy. Sometimes our faith is tested. And sometimes, you know, we have obstacles that come up. And those are opportunities for us to grow. God brings those things in our life sometimes to allow us to grow in our faith and our trust in Him. Perhaps that might be a time in your life right now where you are just a little bit hesitant, a little bit doubtful of what's going on or of trusting God with your life. This is an opportunity for you to grow in your faith and commitment to Him. The Scripture says, when we commit ourselves to Him, He will take care of us. I want to read that passage from Isaiah 26:3 again in closing. You will keep him in perfect peace. I like that, perfect peace. Not just peace that comes and goes. It's not based on emotions or circumstances, because they will come and go. Whose mind is stayed on you? Whose mind is focused on you? Whose mind has been given and dedicated to God? Because He trusts in you. We have put our trust in God. It's not simply on our coins, but it's really written on our hearts. In God we trust.